I'm Marty Moscoen. Welcome to Radio Times. Let me take you back to October 1st, 1975, to the thriller in Manila and the brutal match between Joe Frazier and Muhammad Ali.
Introducing, in the blue corner, weighing 215 and a half pounds, wearing light blue trunks with white stripes, from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, USA, the challenger and former heavyweight champion of the world, Joe Frazier!
Joe Frazier lost that fight that day, the last time these bitter rivals would meet in the ring. There are plans in Philadelphia to build a statue honoring Joe Frazier, who moved to the city when he was a teenager. There are efforts to save his North Philadelphia gym and designate it a historic site. While the city is honoring Frazier after his death, the National Constitution Center in Philadelphia is honoring Muhammad Ali today, giving him the Liberty Medal for his, quote, activism for the cause of freedom. Well, today in Radio Times, we look at the life and career of heavyweight champion Joe Frazier, and we talk about his both storied and troubled relationship with Muhammad Ali. We have two guests who have joined us here in our Philadelphia studios, and Stan Hockman is a Daily News sports columnist, something he's been doing for 53 years. And Stan Hockman, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Good to be here.
And also with us is Joe Hand. He's president of Joe Hand Promotions, owner of the Joe Hand Boxing Gym, a former Philadelphia police officer. He is and was a longtime friend of Joe Frazier. And Joe Hand, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
My pleasure.
Let me begin with you, if I could, Stan, and even listening to that thriller in Manila, we heard loud cheers for Joe Frazier. We heard a mix of boos and cheers for Muhammad Ali. What explains that audience reaction?
Well, first of all, Marty, I think the city is so polarized that you're going to get some phone calls saying, why didn't you play the introduction to fight one, a fight that Frazier won? He lost this one in Manila. Lost it sitting in his corner because he was blinded in one eye, and Eddie Futch, his trainer, wouldn't let him go out to fight anymore. And it's just the story of the two men that people took sides. Ali had charisma and charm, and he was loud and recited bad poetry, and Joe just went about his business. So people took sides.
Well, isn't it sort of a strange circumstance this week in Philadelphia? Yesterday, the mayor, members of Joe Frazier's family, talk about raising $150,000 to build a statue to Joe Frazier. And literally across the street from us, the National Constitution Center is honoring Muhammad Ali. Again, Stan Hockman, I'd be curious about your response.
I'm thrilled that they're finally getting underway a project that will create a statue honoring Joe. I mean, we've got that monstrosity, that movie prop of Rocky sitting there near the art museum, a fictional character, and the city has never seen fit to honor Frazier, who was a legitimate resident of the city and a legitimate heavyweight champion. So I'm happy about that. I'm very unhappy about Ali getting the Liberty Medal. I think it's a dreadful choice.
Why a dreadful choice?
Well, because what exactly has he done to deserve it? I will tell you that I knew Ali from 1960 to 90, spent a lot of time around him. And the most significant thing he ever said to me was, I don't have to be what you want me to be. And that came after he beat Sonny Liston and changed his name to Cassius X the next day. It was later changed to Muhammad Ali. So people said, you've allied yourself with a religion that calls white people blue-eyed devils. you're going to be the heavyweight champion. That doesn't seem right. And that's when he said, I don't have to be what you want me to be. Mm-hmm. Well, people want him to be a civil rights activist. He never was. They want him to be an anti-war martyr. He never was. So now you're giving him the Liberty Medal, which he doesn't deserve. And I feel very strongly about that.
Clearly. Help us understand, and perhaps, Johanna, I'll give you a chance to respond to some of the things that the Stan Hochman was talking about. Do you share the same passion that he has for this choice at the National Constitution Center?
No, not the same passion. Mine is stronger, I think. I spent a lot of time in the Philadelphia Police Department. I know a little more about Muhammad Ali, the people he associated with, who are criminals. I think that I have a girl that works for me. She has a class ring of her brother. He was a paratrooper, landed in Vietnam. That's all they have left of him, part of his class ring. And you're going to give an award to this guy? How about, there's thousands of people that deserve that award more than he does. It's a disgrace. And whoever is the selection committee, they ought to look into it. That guy does not deserve it.
Let me go back to you, Stan Hochman, and help us understand this rivalry. And as you said, it really began at Madison Square Gardens a couple years earlier, where Frazier beat Ali very decisively. What was this rivalry about?
Well,
besides boxing, perhaps.
I'm going to include reflections on the Liberty Medal, even in the build-up to the fight. It was historic because they were both guaranteed $2.5 million. And it didn't matter how many people attended the fight or how many people watched on closed circuit television. That was their purse. It was record breaking. So people who want to justify Ali demeaning and belittling Frazier to sell tickets, it doesn't make any sense. The fight sold out in 2 hours once the tickets were made available. Okay, he called Joe an Uncle Tom. You can't think of a worse insult. He called him the white man's champion. He tried to divide the nation along racial lines. If you were taking sides in that fight, he wanted African Americans on his side and rooting against Joe Frazier. He called him ignorant. Later, before the thriller in Manila, he rhymed gorilla with Manila to describe Joe. All of that, it seems to me, would disqualify him from a Liberty Medal. Mm. I mean, he was taking away Joe's civil liberties with the insults. So there's your build-up to the fight. Ali insulting Joe, and Joe determined to get the job done and shut Ali's mouth that night. And he did, as you said, convincingly.
Indeed. Let me go back to you, Johanna, as someone, the new Joe Frazier. And we do want to play some clips of an insult that Muhammad Ali delivered to Frazier before this fight in Manila. How did Frazier feel about what Muhammad Ali was saying about him in public, including all the things that Stan Hochman just said?
Joe was very quiet. He wouldn't really say anything, just to a few of his trusted friends, and I think I was one of them.
Right.
He had a very deep dislike for Cassius Clay.
As he called him, right?
As he called him, and I'd be proud to call him the same thing. Joe was not the best fighter in the world, but Joe had the biggest heart. There was no doubt who was going to win that fight, no matter what.
This is the first fight.
First fight.
Madison Square Gardens.
And we get into what the first fight was like. The first fight was just marvelous. As Stan said, it sold out in a matter of moments, you know. You had to wear formal wear to get ringside. Never fight like that. And that was strictly enforced.
And a lot of celebrities showed up, right?
All the celebrities. Frank Sinatra worked for Life magazine. He was a photographer. Burt Lancaster, a movie star, he was the color analyst for the show.
But do you think those kinds of insults that Muhammad Ali was lobbing at Joe Frazier, that he used that to get him, in a sense, fired up to beat him in Madison Square Gardens?
Oh, yeah. He used it to was detrimental, every remark he made to himself. Am I correct?
Well, he patted himself early on again. Gorgeous George, the wrestler, who would do the same tactics to get the crowd riled up. He figured out that people paid the same amount who hated him, who admired him, and that's what Ali was doing.
Well, let me play two little clips, and this actually does take us right before the third fight between Joe Frazier and Muhammad Ali. And this is just, these are two very short little clips. The first one is Muhammad Ali. Let's listen.
It will be a killer and a chiller and a thriller when I get the gorilla in Manila.
And you shook your head, Stan Hockman, well, as am I.
He even carried around a little doll, a little toy, a gorilla toy that he shook at the camera. So, you know, making doubly insulting.
Racist insult.
Mm-hmm.
Let me play a little clip, and this is Joe Frazier.
Whatever the games he played, you know, I can play just as much, even more. But therefore, it's not my bag, you know what I mean?
Not my bag,
not
Stan Hockman.
That's right. I mean, Joe, he regarded boxing as a job. I know when he talked to young fighters, his mantra was, no shortcuts. There are no shortcuts in boxing. And as far as the two men are concerned, I'll quote myself.
Go ahead.
It's embarrassing.
No, no, no.
They brought out the best in each other in the ring and the worst in each other outside the ring. You know, the insults and the taunting and that kind of thing. But inside the ring, they were worthy opponents.
Joe, and we will move on from this rivalry between Joe Frazier and Muhammad Ali, Muhammad Ali apparently, at least to a reporter, seemed to apologize for his comments. I'm not sure he ever directly apologized to Joe Frazier. Was Joe Frazier ever able to, in a sense, forgive Muhammad Ali for the things he said about him?
No.
No?
No. And that he apologized to Joe's son, Marvis. And Joe said if he's going to apologize to anybody, he should apologize to me, because that's who he made the remarks pertaining to.
But Stan, he never...
He never forgave him. People would like to think that at some point Joe did it. Joe played sermons before sparring sessions. Sonny Liston played Night Train. Other fighters play music that they really enjoy. But Joe had sermons on tape that he played in his boombox. Two very different men, and with a different approach to fighting.
And I guess living as well. Well, we're going to take a very short break, get back to our conversation. We are talking with Daily News sports columnist Stan Hockman and Joe Hand. He's president of Joe Hand Promotions, owner of the Joe Hand Boxing Gym. He was a Philadelphia policeman for a number of years and was a longtime friend and business partner with Joe Frazier. We are talking about Joe Frazier, beginning with this rivalry with Muhammad Ali. We're going to talk about Joe Frazier's life growing up in the South, moving to Philadelphia, and his skills as a boxer. 1-888-477-9499. Stay with us. Call us. We'll be right back.
Virtua and the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia's pediatric partnership is committed to providing quality care for children in South Jersey. CHOP at Virtua offers a child-friendly environment in Virtua's emergency rooms and children's inpatient units in Voorhees and Mount Holly, featuring pediatric specialists and advanced technology. And now open, CHOP at Virtua's Pediatric Specialty Center and Sleep Care Center in Voorhees. More information online at virtua.org. Virtua is a proud supporter of WHYY.
Where you go to know what's happening in the arts. From paintings to plays to pastries, Friday Arts celebrates local cultural expression October 5th. Where you go to know tomorrow's greats today. Starting October 14th, On Stage at Curtis showcases powerful performers and captivating concerts. Where you go to know what inspires talented musicians. On Canvas features legends and up-and-comers, on stage and behind the curtain, starting October 18th. The new fall season on WHYY-TV, where you go to know.
When NFL linebacker Brendan Ayanbadejo expressed his support for same-sex marriage, a prominent critic tried to tell him to keep his mouth shut and just play ball. But the defensive star is going on the offense off the field.
It's everybody's issue. Every American has the right to be treated fairly.
More on why he's speaking out on same-sex marriage next time on Tell Me More.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY, WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Mosco, and getting a little ahead of myself there. Yesterday, Philadelphia Mayor Michael Nutter, along with members of Joe Frazier's family, announced plans to raise money to erect a statue of the legendary boxer who lived and worked here in Philadelphia. In fact, had a gym many people want to turn into a historic site. And today, Frazier's arch rival Muhammad Ali is receiving the Liberty Medal at a ceremony at the National Constitution Center across the street from us here in Philadelphia. We are talking about the life, this rivalry, and the career of Joe Frazier with Stan Hockman and with Joe Hand. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Stan, if I can go back to you, and I want to fill in some of the blanks here and talk about Joe Frazier's early life. He was born in South Carolina.
Beaufort, South Carolina.
One of, what, 11? Children,
yes,
I think I read.
Son of a sharecropper. And his dad lost an arm. I thought it was in an accident, a farming accident, turned on later on to be retribution by a neighbor because Joe's dad had, never mind.
Wandering
that,
eyes?
In any case,
wandering
yes.
Wandering eyes?
Yes,
okay.
In any case, Joe learned to drive when he was six. Joe was driving a tractor at the age of six. And working is, what did he say, from sun up to sundown.
Sundown, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, he always said that. And I went there because we were doing a documentary on Joe called Heavyweight Incorporated. Went to the house he grew up in. There was a car rusting out on the front lawn.
Wow.
His mom was sitting on the porch in a rocker smoking a corncob pipe. There was a heavy bag filled with burlap and other stuff. It wasn't filled with sand, but it was something that Joe had practiced on and punched to develop his punch. So even back then, before he came to Philadelphia, where he really lost some weight and honed his boxing skills in the Police Athletic League gym, but even back then, he had dreams of being heavyweight champion.
That's interesting. Joe Hand, I was reading that Joe Frazier talked about being his dad's left hand, his dad having lost his left hand, and we know about Joe Frazier's left hook. Do you think there's some connection there?
Oh, positively. The left hook that Joe Frazier has had, it was natural. It was just something that he didn't go to the gym and practice all the time, although he did that, right. But I mean, he didn't build. He just had that naturally from when he was a kid, and when Stan talks about going down south, I went down south too, not with Stan, but I'll never forget. His mother was one of the sweetest women you'd ever want to meet, on a rocking chair with a corncob pipe, and was, "You'll stay for lunch, son." You know, it was one of those things. You were in the house, and it was really a clapboard house, I guess you'd describe it, was just all wood. Joe came from nothing. And as Stan would agree with me to say that where his family worked, on a plantation, he bought that plantation for his parents, for his mother, when he became the champion.
Wow. Boy, that sort of takes us full circle.
I got another postscript to that visit. He had a check that he wanted the cash. He was the heavyweight champion of the world when the film crew followed him to Beaufort, and he went to the bank, and they wouldn't cash it, even though he was Joe Frazier, because his skin was the wrong color. And that really was painful to watch. I mean, he was the heavyweight champion of the world, and he couldn't cash a check in Beaufort, South Carolina.
So we talking, what, the 60s?
Late 60s.
Late 60s.
Yeah.
Joe, how did Joe Frazier end up in Philadelphia? He came here actually as a teenager.
He came in here when he was about 17 years old.
Yeah.
And lived in New York. He came here, and he went to the Police Athletic League to lose weight. Joe always had very big thighs, and that was his... He always had a hard time getting pants that was, his legs would fit in. So he went to the gym and worked out. And he was there when they opened up, and he was there when they closed.
Go ahead.
I'll get back to. We're going to go back to South to Buford one time. I went down there representing the business group Cloverleigh, and we were going to build a playground down there. So they said, we called ahead of time, and the mayor was going to meet me in Howard Johnson. Now, I brought two of Joe Frazier's sisters with me, and we were sitting in the Howard Johnson's, and they said, people say, hey, here comes the mayor. Came to the door, looked into the dining room, turned around and left, and then I got a phone call, and they said, sorry, the mayor is, you know, he couldn't come in there with, you were sitting with two black women. And we were going to give them a playground. And they said to me, at the time I was a policeman, you were allowed to carry a gun wherever you went. And I was armed and everything. But when I was down there, they said, you have to leave town. And when I went out to get in my car, there was a detective car there, followed me right to the airport, put me on the plane, and away I went. We never built the playground.
Because you were a white man sitting with two black women in a Howard Johnson's?
In a Howard Johnson's, yeah.
Wow.
So it was a lot different than people realize.
And people should and this is not ancient history, too. People should realize.
But he did get to speak to the South Carolina legislature, maybe the first African American to do that. And Joe handled it very well, didn't he?
Yes, he did.
Yeah.
And something he never had the opportunity to do in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, right.
Interesting. Let me go back to you, Stan, because you made a reference to a fictional boxing statue, which is in Philadelphia, of Rocky. And from that early movie of Rocky, we see him, you know, working in the slaughterhouse, punching those carcasses. That's what Joe Frazier did in real life.
Sylvester Stallone based the character on Chuck Wepner, who bled during the national anthem before anybody even hit him. But in any case, he borrowed that scene from Joe Frazier's true life, and he worked for the Cross Brothers in a slaughterhouse and would toughen his hands by pounding the sides of beef.
And did he run up the steps to the art museum as well?
No, he did not. He ran, he did his road work probably on the drive, what is now Kelly Drive.
Yeah, back at Fairmount Park.
Right.
On the drive.
And wore boots because it
heavy work boots.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Running wow.
Yeah, made it feel better when you stopped.
His routine was he would get up early in the morning and run, then he'd come back, he'd have something to eat, then he'd go to bed and he'd rest and read or listen to music or something like that, and then into the gym. Mm-hmm. And it was that, and he did that day in, day out to prepare for a fight.
Joe, can you talk a little bit about, is his name Yank Durham?
Yeah,
Yank. This was his trainer?
Yank was an ex-railroad employee who trained minor fighters, and he took a liking to Joe. And Joe, not having a father at the time, Yank was like his father.
Mm-hmm.
If Yank asked him to jump off a bridge, he would go jump off the bridge. He did everything Yank... And Yank, I think, had a great ability when you figure you sign for a fight 3 months in advance, and then you know that March the 7th, you have to be right on top of your game. And he had the ability to get Joe right up there. He was a great, great trainer. And I'll tell you a little story about Yank, too.
We love stories.
You got the right guy if you love stories. Yank used to cut his fingernails to a point, his thumb. And there was a fighter, Leotis Martin, that he trained also. And when Leotis Martin would come back into the corner, Yank would go and grab the mouthpiece and it'd stick him with that piece with his nail. And he'd go, whoa, what are you doing?
Because it hurts, right?
It hurts. He said, well, then don't come back here again. And that's how Leotis Martin had a great record. And Leotis Martin, if you remember, Stan, he wanted to fight Joe Frazier, but Yank Durham would never allow him.
He wound up fighting Sonny Liston and beating him in Vegas, and I was there that day.
Yeah.
But that was the end of both careers, as a matter of fact, because Liotis had a detached retina after that fight.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Well, let me just No, that's fine. Let me just reintroduce the two of you, and that's Stan Hockman. He's a sports columnist for the Philadelphia Daily News, a job he's had, he told me, for 53 years. Joe Hand is with us as well, president of Joe Hand Promotions, owner of Joe Hand Boxing Gym, a former Philadelphia policeman. He was one of the original investors in Cloverlay, and that was a consortium of Philadelphia businessmen who backed Joe Frazier early in his career. And we are talking about the life, the career of Joe Frazier. I should add that yesterday, Philadelphia Mayor Michael Nutter, along with members of Frazier's family, announced plans to raise some money to erect a statue of the legendary boxer who moved to Philadelphia when he was a teenager. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. I do want to get to our callers, but Stan, if I can go back to you.
Yeah.
For those that have never seen Joe Frazier fight, how would you describe his approach to boxing?
Well, he had limitations because of his size. He wasn't tall for a heavyweight, and he had short arms for a heavyweight. So he had to come straight ahead. He had to go into that machine gun fire that his opponent was throwing up in order to land his punches. And Joe was willing to fight that way. I'll confess, even now, I thought he was going to have a short career because he would have to take punishment to get close enough to land his punches. But he surprised me. He lasted a lot longer than I thought he would. And he had that devastating left hook. After the first fight, when he knocked Ali down in the 15th round, after the fight in the press conference, Frazier said that came from down home.
Oh.
And I think he meant Beaufort, South Carolina, but he also meant Philadelphia, where he had polished his skills.
And Joe, he was called Smoking Joe, I guess, for that kind of style of fighting.
Yank Doran really gave him that name. He would say to him, Joe, you're smoking. But if I just say, when I saw Frazier fight, and I always was fascinated that Frazier would darn near put his head on the other guy's shoulders. And I would say, I said to him one day, how you're so close, how do you know what he's going to do? And he looked at me like, you dope. I watch his feet.
Oh, wow.
He
mm-hmm.
said, I can tell what kind of a punch he's going to throw by his feet. So, yeah.
But he, as you say, Stan, the kind of punishment that he must have taken as a boxer.
Yeah, they were never the same after that first fight, physically. It did so much damage to each of them that they were never quite the same after that.
You mean mentally?
Physically.
Physically, mentally. Physically.
Well, Ali suffers from Parkinson's syndrome, and at first they said, no, that's not from all the punches he took. But we know differently. It is from the punches he took.
But same for Joe Frazier.
And Frazier spent a week in the hospital after that first fight. And, on merit, not to rest and looking for privacy. Joe needed some medical attention after that first fight.
Joanne, how did you meet Joe Frazier, and how did you become so closely associated with this boxer?
Well, what people don't realize is Joe Frazier and I both worked for the same company, Cloverlay.
Oh.
So I read probably in the Daily News that they were going to start a company to guide his career. And there was Thatcher Longstreth, longtime politician, John B. Kelly, Grace Kelly's brother, Arthur Coffin, and Harold Wessel, who was the senior partner of Ernst & Ernst at the time, which is now Ernst & Young. And I thought, boy, that'd be great to get in. So I wrote on a postcard a letter to Dr. Baldwin, who was the president, who owned Abbott's Dairies, and he was a manager of all the Horn and Hornets across the country.
Oh, my goodness.
So I lived on Jackson Street. And so he wrote me a letter back, and he said, I'll sell you a share of stock. He said, if I can't help a Jackson Streeter out, I can't help anybody out. So it was really, I got involved in this because of the street that I lived on.
Oh, that's great. And you were a police officer at the time?
Yeah. And I put the two jobs. They said to me, Bruce Wright, who was the attorney, said, we want you to work for us. Would you just tell me how much do you want? I said, if I could get 100 hours a month, I would be thrilled. And that was my first paycheck from them. It was $100 a month.
Wow.
It certainly increased as time went by.
And what year was this? How far back?
When he come back out of the Olympics in 65, okay. About 64, he won in Tokyo, and then 65 he came back.
Yeah. Well, let me get some callers in at 1-888-477-9499. We are talking about boxing legend Joe Frazier. And we have, looks like, Bill from Wincote joining us on Radio Times. And, Bill, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. I want to say that the fights that I saw with Joe Frazier and Muhammad Ali should go down as some of the greatest fights of all time. They were very brutal, as he was saying. And Joe Frazier, anytime I say his name, is Smoking Joe Frazier, because that's the way he fought. He came in there. He didn't know anything about retreat. He always went straight forward. He was fearless. And I remember hearing Ali say after one of those fights, it was the closest thing to death he ever experienced. So wow. I'm glad to hear that they're going to have a statue of a real fighter, Smoking Joe Frazier. And I hope that they eventually make his gym a national museum, and I also hope that they put that historic plaque out there from Pennsylvania. But he deserves it all, and I do know that they named the street after him in Beaufort, his place for being
good.
Born.
Oh, that's great, Bill. I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Let me give Stan Hockman a chance to respond.
Yeah, well, full circle, it was Joe that bought that property. Isn't that right, Joe?
Yep, I bought the gym for $85,000 at the time. And we put $85,000, just that was a number, in improvements into the gym. It was really a modern gym. It was great, and it was good for the business, for the Clover Lay people. We knew where Frazier was all the time. We kind of knew what he was doing, he was a valuable commodity to our company. So it was just a wonderful gym. Now it's a furniture store. So now they can talk at all they want about putting a museum in there, because I think that's next to impossible. I think they can put the sign outside as a historic building. But the furniture people, from what I understand, they have taken everything out of that building that even refers to boxing. So it would be hard where the ring is, maybe the furniture, that's the bedding department and things like that. So it'd be very hard to recreate that into a museum.
Right.
But to name it a historical spot would be great.
Do you second that, Stan?
I spent many an hour at the Joe Frazier gym, and it was a fascinating place. The bare brick wall and the big photo murals, including one of him landing that left hook on Ali's jaw, and it was just it wasn't fancy at all, right, Joe? I mean, they had some folding metal chairs. If he was training for a fight, people could sit in those chairs.
Well, Yank had a strict rule. He, when I built the place, he made me put a wall up where people, I mean, you could look over it, but you couldn't come in the door unless he buzzed you in, because he didn't want anybody talking to any of his fighters. They were his fighters, and he was going to keep them.
And that was Yank Durham. Let's take another short break. We'll get back to our conversation. We are talking about the life of legendary boxer Joe Frazier, who moved to Philadelphia in the late 1950s. In fact, died in the city about a year ago, this past November. Their efforts to build a statue and to honor his gym in North Philadelphia. Talking with Stan Hockman and Joe Hand. And we're talking to you at 1-888-477-9499.
Supporting WHYY, Greener Partners, announcing their annual Square Dance and Pig Roast, Friday, September 28th. And they're celebrating the Harvest Festival, Saturday, September 29th. The festival features family activities such as local food vendors, heritage breed animals, hay rides, an heirloom tomato contest, and more. Both events will be held at Hillside Farms in Media, PA. For tickets to the Square Dance and Pig Roast on Friday evening, and for more information about the festival on Saturday, greenerpartners.org/heirloom.
On the next Fresh Air, comic W. Kamau Bell, host of the FX series Totally Biased, which brings an African-American perspective to political comedy. On one of Bell's comedy tours, to attract a multicultural audience, he made this offer.
If you bring a friend of a different race, you get in 2-for-1.
Join us for the next Fresh Air. this afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. Join us next time for the news and these stories here and now. Chicago's teachers are striking in part over how their performance will be measured. So how do you grade teachers fairly? Also, Molly Ringwald turns from acting to fiction writing in a new novel of connected short stories. That's Public Radio's Daily Digest of News and Culture, here and now.
Today at noon on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane. There are plans in Philadelphia to build a statue honoring Joe Frazier, who moved to the city when he was about 17 years old. There are also efforts to save his North Philadelphia gym and to designate it a historic site. The city, interestingly, is honoring Muhammad Ali today, giving him the Liberty Medal for his, quote, activism for the cause of freedom. We are looking at the life and career of heavyweight champ Joe Frazier and both his storied and troubled relationship with Muhammad Ali. And again, our guests are Joe Hahn, president of Joe Hahn Promotions, owner of the Joe Hahn Boxing Gym, a former Philadelphia policeman. He was one of the original investors in Cloverlay, and that was a consortium of Philadelphia businessmen who backed Frazier early in his career. And Joe Hahn, a longtime friend of Joe Frazier, also with us, Stan Hockman, Daily News sports columnist, a job he's had for 53 years, and got to know Joe Frazier and covered many of his fights as well. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Let me get Reggie from West Philadelphia to join us. And Reggie, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
Is it fair, gentlemen, to say that March 8th, 1971, easily the biggest boxing event in history, possibly the biggest sporting event?
Oh, I don't know about sporting. There are some soccer fans in Europe who would say some World Cup match with Italy against Spain. But in the United States, I can't think in my 53 years of a more significant fight that lived up to its hype. I mean, all the attention leading up to the fight, and then it turned out to be a terrific fight. And I will brag that the Daily News sold 500,000 papers the next day. We doubled our normal circulation. There wasn't another paper in the world that doubled its circulation the next day. So people obviously cared about the fight.
Reggie, you want to add to that? Did we lose Reggie?
13, and because of it, I became a lifelong boxing fan. Given the backdrop of the Vietnam War, race relations in the U.S., because if you guys remember, you know, it was one side or the other. There were no neutrals. You know, if you were of one persuasion, you were for Ali. Another, you were for Joe. And just real quick, I happened to meet Joe at an MMA event when the UFC came to Philadelphia a couple of years back. You know, one of a couple of times that I just happened to meet him. Man, just a super, super gentleman and just a hero of mine.
Oh, that's great, Reggie. And we missed just a little bit. You were about 13 years old in 1971. Johan, you want to add to that, saying what a sweet guy Joe Frazier was?
Joe Frazier would do, for me, anything that really I asked him. And I'm 76 years old now, so I don't remember everything. And a lot of times people stop me and say to me, Joe, I really appreciate you bringing him to the hospital to see my father. My father died, but that was his bright spot of his life, saying that Frazier came to see him. If there was ever a policeman hurt, Joe Frazier went to Philadelphia General Hospital to see that policeman. He was just a good guy, and he would do anything for if it was legitimate. He would throw his hat into the ring.
And Joe Frazier also was a fan and supporter of Frank Rizzo, who was a longtime legendary police commissioner.
Yeah, Frank Rizzo was my boss. And I introduced the two of them together, and they hit it off. And I think the reason they got together, I always tell people we went to the Ben Franklin Hotel for lunch, and it was Rizzo and his crowd. And myself and Joe, and Rizzo had his own table, and he sat down, and he said, I'm going to get the crab sandwiches. They're great. So the other seven guys all said, oh, I'll have a crab sandwich. I'll have a crab sandwich. I'll have a crab sandwich. They got to Joe, and Joe said, give me a ham and cheese on rye or something like that. And like everybody thought, oh, my God, he's not eating Bert Rizzo. But they developed a great relationship, and it was just, I don't think, look, Rizzo was interested in having a black personality on his campaign and everything like that. But in turn, Joe did anything that Frank wanted. Frank did anything that Joe wanted. If he needed something in the neighborhood, somebody would call, or oh, there's not a policeman here, Rizzo would take care of that.
You want to add to that, Stan?
Well, I lost my train of thought.
Okay.
Oh, no. Johann said that Joe Frazier would do anything. Well, he asked him to do something on my behalf because we were filming a scene for the documentary, and Joe had grown a beard. And at that time, New Jersey and New York boxing commissions wouldn't let you fight with a beard. So to make it realistic and authentic, I wanted Joe to shave his beard for that scene that we were filming. And Joe Hand had to ask Joe Frazier, and he did it. He went into the restroom at Convention Hall and or the arena. I forget where we were.
Arena.
The arena. And he shaved his beard, and we went ahead and did that scene.
Wow. Thanks for the call, Reggie. Let's see what Christopher from Collegeville has to say. And Christopher, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, guys. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
You know what? This question actually, I guess, would specifically be for Joe. I have one of my best friends is a boxer out of the Police Athletic League in Phoenixville. I just wanted to see what you guys had to say about Joe Frazier's contribution to modern-day boxing, and especially in the Philadelphia area.
It's a good question, Christopher, and I'll toss that first to you, Joe Hand.
Yeah, Joe had his, when Joe had his gym, he didn't turn anybody away. He had his office right there. A lot of times he slept there, and it wasn't because he was penniless or anything like that, but he had a nice apartment upstairs, so he slept up there. He was readily available to anybody that wanted to come in and wanted advice on boxing and anything like that. And he was just a good example. There weren't women around. There were the rap music at the time wasn't blaring. It was... You know, it was just a nice atmosphere for a young fellow to come in. So I think Frazier did contribute to boxing in the Philadelphia area.
And Stan, were there local boxers that he might have influenced helped along the way?
Oh, yeah. Yes, he did. His son Marvis fought as a heavyweight briefly. He might have been overmatched, and the results would indicate that. But Joe, I have to say, though, that Joe was true to himself in that he expected young fighters to fight the way he did. He would say, breathe on them. And Joe Hand talked about how his head was on the other guy's shoulder. He felt you had to get that close to a guy. Well, not every fighter can fight that way.
No.
But Joe expected guys to be willing to take a punch, to get in close, and to do the damage that way. But he was an example of hard work and discipline and dedication, and that's, you know, his legacy is that this was a hard working, dedicated guy.
And didn't two of his daughters fight, Jackie and Layla?
No, Layla is Ali's daughter.
Oh,
they fought each other.
They fought each other.
Yeah,
but
Jackie did fight. Yeah,
Jackie's now a judge in the Philadelphia court system. Yeah, very nice young lady, and. Joe would be very, very proud of her right now, how she's transgressed into such a wonderful person.
Let me ask you, Stan, because we didn't really give enough attention to his gold medal when he fought in the Olympics. Tell us about that fight.
1964 in Tokyo, and he's got a busted thumb, but he knows he can't reveal that because they won't permit him to fight, so he manages to disguise it and to tape it as severely as he can and goes out there and wins the gold medal fight. He was not the original representative in the heavyweight class. It was Buster Mathis who won the right to represent the United States as a heavyweight, but then he broke his thumb in training, and that's how Joe got the chance. Well, after he won the fight and came back with the gold medal, he couldn't push those sides of beef around with a busted thumb, and he lost his job, and he was out of work. And shortly thereafter, Clovelly formed to make sure he had a paycheck and to keep him going.
Quite a story. Let me get Frank from Philadelphia to join us. And Frank, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi. How are you doing?
Good.
Back in I'm an architect, and back in 2002, to, I think it was 2004, our firm did a lot of drawings for that gym on Broad Street near Broad and Glenwood, and we did it mostly with Marvis. I did get to meet Joe Frazier once, but and my business partner at the time, who has since passed away, was in charge of that, and there was a lot of work that we put into that. And unfortunately, it kind of stopped at some point. I believe it was after Marvis had a personal issue he couldn't overcome. I think his wife had passed, but I wasn't sure about that. I just wanted to mention that because I was listening to your show, and there was a lot of talk about turning it into a museum.
Right.
And we actually did a lot of work that I don't recall if it was we were turning it into a museum. It was more like we were sort of bringing it back to its old glory days, I believe.
Well, Frank, and what firm are we talking about? And then we'll get Stan Hockman to respond.
The firm is called CKG.
Oh, CKG.
Okay. It's still in business. I'm about ready to close it down this year. CKG Architects, we've been in business since 1996. And David Grace was the architect who really ran that project. I was his business partner at the time.
Oh, that's interesting. Let me give Stan
Well, you know, that's it's a sensitive subject because Marvis did have these grandiose dreams for the building. The BBC did a documentary a year and a half ago, finally giving Joe Frazier's side of the rivalry with Ali, and I was thrilled that they did it, and I cooperated with them, but they had many scenes in there of Marvis showing these drawings, these architectural drawings. Huh. Well, it never came to be, and the sad part is that Marvis had to read about the gym being sold in the newspaper. Joe Frazier somehow did not get around to telling Marvis he was going to sell the gym, and that hurt Marvis deeply. As a matter of fact, Marvis has left the area, and he's in the Baltimore, Washington area as a security guard for a department store. So I hope Marvis will be involved in choosing the sculptor and choosing the pose. I hope that those wounds can heal.
You want to add to that, Joe?
Yeah, well, I think it's Jackie is the oldest in the family, and then Marvis. And they were absent yesterday, from what I understand. And they're the two people that's... I knew Joe Frazier when he had five children. So now they say there's 11, so I don't know where they came from. Oh. But anyway, I it's a shame that Marvis isn't active in this thing because I started the ball rolling for the statue and I did it a year ago and we ran into some problems with the city and so on. But
it looks like the city's on board, though, at least according to Mayor Michael Nutter.
Well, yeah, the city will provide a mailbox for the people who want to contribute, the Fund for Philadelphia, and all that money will go towards building the statue. Xfinity Live is involved because that sports bar and restaurant complex wants the statue there, and I think 6 million people, if you add up attendance at Phillies, Eagles, Sixers, and Flyers games, will be there. So it's a logical place. And the very first event at the Spectrum was a Joe Frazier fight. He fought a guy named Tony Doyle. And so it's an appropriate spot. All of that, having said all of that, I am now anxious to see how a committee of 11 or 12 pick a sculptor and pick a pose, and I hope it happens soon.
Well, and we're almost out of time here. We are going to end with actually Joe Frazier singing a song called My Way. But just to add, and Joe Hamm, we have about a minute here before we have to say goodbye, or even less than that. Why was he interested in a singing career? I guess the short answer to that question, if you don't mind.
Oh, he thought he could sing.
He thought he could sing.
He could fight, but he thought he could sing.
I have to say, as a kind of a setup, because we were going back and forth, there's a certain charm to the way that he sang. Would you say? I mean, he might not win American Idol.
No, he wouldn't finish in the top 10. But he was earnest and sincere about it. He worked at it. As a singer, he was a great fighter.
Yeah,
a great fighter. And it sounds like Joe also a really lovely person.
Oh, yeah.
I'm so anxious to see this statue go up. And I told the city that if they wouldn't pay for it, and Stan knows it, that we have the money to pay for it. But we'll see what I talked to Mayor Nutter yesterday, and very cordial, and I want to help him, ask for my help, and I'll get all the help from him that he can from me, and I'll support it 100%.
Well, it's been a great pleasure to have both of you with us on Radio Times. Thank you very much.
Well, we both enjoyed
ourselves. Yeah, it was good.
It was good. Indeed, it was good. And our guests have been...
I think we could do this for about 4 hours.
Yes.
But I have to stop you because we do want to end things with Joe Frazier. Our thanks to Joe Hand and to Stan Hockman. And our thanks to our callers as well. We do want to close things out with Joe Frazier singing his version of the Frank Sinatra song, My Way.
The time is near, the time is here, to check my hopes and prepare to take the dare. It's time to climb right through them ropes and to face a man who has a plan and states that plan, not in a shy way. Well, that's his right, but come the fight, I'll fight him my way. Come a long, long ways, and like they say, it took some doing. I play the boxer's role to reach the goal we all pursue. And friends I fought like I was taught, and never a low hope, a sly way. I fought them fair, I fought them square, I fought them my.